Manchester City have won the Premier League.
Goals against Emil Heskey. Could it be five? Yes, it is.
Frank De Boer seeking out Dennis Bergkamp. Oh, that's brilliant! Oh, that's wonderful! That is a magnificent goal. Balotelli, Aguero.
Hello, welcome to the V2 Football Podcast. I'm Chris Lappin, and join me this week, I've got Shane Lees. I'm Richard Hare Hudson.
Good evening. It's been too long since I've heard that.
Yeah, it's about 5 weeks.
The first of 2018.
Yeah, do you have a good Christmas New Year?
Ah, not bad yourself.
Yeah, I got.
Oh, that was very spooky.
Yeah, I got. I think Joel woke up 4:15, 4:45, and we finally got up 4:45.
That's pretty early.
Yeah, he knew he was getting an Xbox, so he just couldn't sleep.
Well, I've got their second Xbox about 3 days before Christmas after the one that they got 4 years ago blew up the week before Christmas.
And the two-year-old just loved everything about it, but he's two, so it doesn't matter what time he wakes up.
Yeah, you just get him a cardboard box and be happy.
Yeah.
He's got a car.
But, yeah, that was fun.
Ball of wool. It's fine.
Alright, so should we start with a few stories that have happened since our last show? So, Romelu Lukaku is seeking legal advice after the Everton owner Fayyad Ashari, is that how it's pronounced, said that he opted to leave the club after receiving a voodoo message whilst on a pilgrimage to Africa.
That is one of those things that's so bizarre, you know it's true. It's like, you wouldn't have ever thought to have made that up. That wouldn't have made sense to have made it up. It's not something even someone who writes fiction would make up. It's just a little bit too odd. So when he says it, you know it's probably true, and Lukaku getting legal advice is like, oh god, I look batshit insane now.
Well,
I kind of need them to retract that.
His legal representative said Romelu is very Catholic and voodoo is not part of his life or his beliefs.
Oh yeah, I mean...
It'll probably turn out it was Stormzy.
Catholicism and voodoo, it's all very different. It's just a different kind of chanting, really.
Yeah, he added...
Sorry, Catholic fans.
He said he simply had no faith in Everton and no confidence in Mr. Mahari's project. That's why he wanted to sign for somebody else.
No faith in voodoo as well, apparently.
Yeah, you don't need voodoo to work that out.
No. Right, so we probably have this discussion every first show of the season. But Pep Guardiola has criticised the Premier League fixtures over the winter, saying it's killing his players. So,
if that's the only thing that can help the rest of the teams catch up, then yeah, brilliant.
Yeah. So Shane, you've wrote about this in the past. What's your current view on it?
Well, I don't think we should have a winter break. And you can go about it various ways and say, okay, what about the health of the players and so on. The simple fact is, yes, some teams will have more games in like a week than other teams will have, but everyone's playing the same amount of games over the season, and if you're in cup competitions as well, that's your own burden. You could choose to lose a cup competition. You can even technically withdraw from a cup competition. They are actually allowed to do that. So them being in that is just them trying to achieve more success, and now they're saying, oh, but isn't that a burden? I'm sorry, but that's competitive sports that you're trying to win at. That's kind of how it exactly works. The more you're in, the more you are competitive in, the more exerting it is. That is true across every sport. And for me, the simple point is you want to preserve the culture of each individual league's football. We don't in Germany, we don't want to take away fan ownership of clubs and things like that. And there's a reason why everyone's getting a bit uppity about Leipzig, because they see that as being encroaching on the culture of the football there. And winter football has become a staple part of, you know, what British football is. It's probably one of the most defining parts of the season. So to, you know, take it out, to cut it out and then shift it somewhere else. They're still playing the same games. They're now just having a break in between. It's seen as this big revolutionary thing and all of that, but I just think it's way too overblown for what it actually is, and I don't think it really adds anything to the league. It takes things away.
I agree with you in regards to professional football, which should be completely fine playing over the winter and such. I disagree in regards to grassroots.
I think that's understandable.
I think at grassroots level, as a parent of a a child that, that plays that, you get from sort of the beginning of November all the way through to February, and it's an enforced winter break just because the kids can't play the games every week. The pitches aren't in a fit state to do it. I'd actually run the grassroots season from sort of February through to November.
Yeah, when it comes to grassroots, when it comes to amateur, I think that's where, just being practical, knowing the pitches are going to get, you know, called off half the time, so that makes sense where you remove it. And then maybe then you might have a bit more of a cultural change, and then it's less of a dramatic shift or a shift happening because we've got foreign players or foreign managers coming into the leagues demanding change. Then it's more of a natural thing if it happens in that way. I just don't see why the English game should change to accommodate foreign players. It should be the other way. They should change to accommodate to our game. Just in the exact same way as if an English player or an English manager goes over to Germany or Spain. They should have to adapt to what the league is there, adapt to the cultures there in order to be able to, be able to play there. That just seems imminently practical. And I think we're
that
having
it... happen much though, does it?
No, but it's the point is the adjustment should be done by the person who's moving there. And I just think that when we have it every single year, some foreign manager, normally he's competing for fourth or he's competing for the title, and he says, oh, you know, we need a winter break, we need a winter break, this is all too straining on my players. You never really hear people who are actually based in this country turn around and demand these things. And that's because they've gotten used to it. Pep Guardiola just needs to get used to it and accept this is part of the game, the same as fan ownership is in Germany. It's these are what make these individual leagues of football different and make them special, so don't take them away.
Sounding a bit Nigel Farage with this, this player line. Well, these foreigners coming over here, they have to adapt to what we want.
Well, from a sports science point of view, they're recommending at least 3 days in between each match for recovery.
I mean, that just makes sense. I don't see why they can't have winter football and still manage to have 3 days between games.
Could we still have the Christmas fixture pile up and then have 2 weeks during January?
Just don't have as many stupid international weekend breaks in the middle of the season.
Yeah, I agree. I've seen no reason why, especially for like qualifiers, that shouldn't happen over a summer, like a fairly intense period there, because we kind of already do that with things like actual tournaments.
Yeah.
So there's a reason we put the tournaments in those points. that was us being practical, now we're being impractical. There's plenty of time in the calendar to fit this all in, but what happens, and this is where I can understand why especially managers in, say, the Championship or the lower leagues can feel aggrieved, fixtures get rearranged for TV, and that's why some, you know, teams are playing twice in, you know, within 3 days, within 2 days. That's why that ends up happening. The league needs to get some balls and be able to turn to the people who are putting these things on TV and go, right, you can have that game on TV, but it's happening on this day because otherwise this doesn't make any sense anymore. That needs to be had a look at when games get rearranged for TV. That's probably the big issue, actually, here.
Harry, do you think from it would be helpful for us?
Trying to say football dictate to Sky rather than the other way around. I don't think that.
What a novel idea that would be.
Harry, do you think from it would be helpful for the referees' point of view? Because there's been a few dodgy decisions over the last couple of games, and they're blaming it on fatigue.
Well, the referees are worn out.
For example, Andre Mariner, over 8 days, drove himself over 1,000 miles to referee 4 games in 8 days. He's blaming. He's mentally fatigued.
Maybe we should have more referees. Gee, that's another novel solution there. When overworked, hire more staff. I think every company in the world knows that one.
But we shouldn't be...
I don't really have much sympathy. It's like, try telling all these complaints to a frontline doctor.
Or even just the people who volunteer to do these kinds of things for, you know, non-league and all these kinds of things, when you're getting right down there to the amateurs and all of that lot, they go through all this kind of crap, and they don't get paid for it.
I listened to an interview with Keith Hackett, and that's where I got the stat for Andre Mariner. He said he drove from Leeds right down to Bournemouth, I think, just to be the fourth official. So couldn't they just use a Football League referee for that day?
Yep, they should. Get more referees. That makes so much sense. This is just nonsense. They're going, oh, we need a winter break. Hire another referee. Why aren't they thinking of this? Why am I not in charge of these people? This is just nonsense.
Alright, so we did ask our Twitter followers whether they should introduce a winter break, and 40% said yes. 60% still say no.
40% of those people are probably Spanish or stupid. Well,
they're going off, going to the fixtures on a Boxing Day and New Year's Day as well. That's sort of a great tradition. You know, you usually get quite a lot more sort of casual fans turning up for those games. Like Macclesfield, he probably had double the home capacity for double home attendance than it gets for the rest of the season over the Christmas period.
And it's one of those things, English footballers being so bastardised by external influences, by the money, by foreign players coming in, foreign managers, it's getting eaten away by the corporate interests where it's becoming more and more soulless. So I think we should just kind of cling on for dear life to the few things that are actually unique and good about English football that are left. Because once we start hiding away these things, we're kind of totally at the whims of, I'd say, the corporate interests. Because if we suddenly say, oh, we'll get rid of the winter schedules to suit the players and the managers and all things, it's not going to get reparceled out on the basis of doesn't this make sense. It's going to go the way of what do the TV companies want. That's the way it'll go. Let's not be optimistic
about this. I'm sure you want to turn this back to 1950s Britain.
Coming over here, taking our jobs, taking our women. I'm an old soul, what can I say?
I remember the good old days where I used to be able to fight on the terraces.
The good old days when we conquered Britain. I'm going back 2,000 years now.
Alright, so in part two we'll be reviewing the transfer window so far.
Hello, this is Adam Virgo and you are listening to the V2 Football Podcast.
So Shane, you've probably been itching for weeks to discuss this transfer, so should we start with Virgil van Dijk joining Liverpool for £75 million?
Yeah, that's a good place to start. Alright, from a Southampton fan's point of view, bloody hell, £75 million. That's a lot of money for a defender. I mean, that is the most money ever paid for a defender.
About 20 million more than the last record.
Virgil van Dijk is a very talented defender. I've said on this show before, I think he can be a genuinely world-class talent. I still think that. He's not worth £75 million. Not to us, because if he's already playing for a Barcelona and they need to go and sign a replacement defender and they can go and sign a £75 million defender, it makes perfect sense to go and pay that much money. Not to bloody Southampton, it doesn't make sense. We've totally robbed them. That is a ridiculous amount of money for someone who, yes, could be world-class, but also the amount of players we've sold, everyone's gone, look how good they could be, and they've not turned out to be that good in the end. We could fill a small car with that amount of players. So they're paying that money for a lot of potential because he's already very good, but it's a lot of potential. And considering the way he left, the fact that he didn't play football for near enough a year and a half in leaving, and he's generally kind of lost, I'd say, a bit of his professionalism in the way he demanded to leave, who knows what he'll actually turn out to be. I suppose from the other point of view, if I'm looking at this from just sort of a money point perspective, it kind of shows how ridiculous this has all gotten now, doesn't it? £75 million for a centre-half who's not even the best centre-half in the world. That money...
Not the best centre-half in the Premier League.
No, I know. If someone turned around and spent that much money on, I don't know, Jerome Boateng, buying who I'd say is at least probably in that top three or four centre-halves, I think, maybe they still overpaid a little bit. So that should probably let you know just how much this is. I think it's staggering, really. But the other thing from a Suns fan's point of view is, thank God he's finally gone. Obviously, we wanted to keep him. We wanted to be able to say we can take a stand and so on and so on. But at the same time, it had clearly become a poisonous part of the club. It had clearly been disrupting in the dressing room, and it's kind of a little bit of a cloud has lifted now. Now, whether or not that actually can help us turn around our absolutely dismal season into something better, who knows? But from my point of view, I don't know, a single Southampton fan is thinking, oh God, no, we lost Virgil van Dijk. It's, oh my God, £75 million, please, board, spend that money. That's our thing.
I think that's the big thing, though, is will Southampton actually then go and spend that money?
Well, apparently we're in for a number of players, though we hear that every single year. Apparently we want Daniel Sturridge, Theo Walcott, some other various people. If we do go and reinvest that money, then good, because we bloody well need to. If we don't, then I think serious questions will be being asked by the Southampton faithful of the board, because then it will be a question of, so what exactly are we doing? We're not bringing through youth players consistently. We're not just trying to be cynical and go for cups or trying to get into Europe. We're not really doing anything. It's interesting. I actually wrote an email to Les Reed with that criticism.
Yeah.
Les Reed being a director of football, saying big clubs go down, or clubs that are too big to go down, not when they fail at something abysmally, it's when they do nothing. You look at Newcastle, you look at West Ham, when those clubs went down, they went down because they were indecisive, not because they made the wrong decisions. And that is why I feel like we're in that position a little bit at the moment. We're not really doing anything. We're not playing any particular way. We're not dedicating how we do this in any particular way. We're not, you know, spending a whole bunch of money, or we're not saying, right, we're just going to bring through kids and try and have, you know, a proper good future for Southampton, or at least, you know, England, or that kind of thing. We're not doing anything. That is the real worrying thing from a Southampton fans' point of view, because our success was because we were trying to do something different. We were trying to be one of the clubs that led the way on, you know, all sorts of different things. Coming up and playing the right way, we were one of the, you know, first clubs who really set that out for the likes of Bournemouth and, you know, Huddersfield to go and try and follow on, where you're actually trying to play good football straight away from going up, trying to bring through youth players and have it being a targeted regular thing you're doing every year. You're targeting a certain number of youth players to come through. Very few clubs are doing that. Our success came about because we had the principles, which were called the Southampton way. We've kind of gotten a bit lost in our way at the moment. The start of that is going to be, I think, either, and this was the thing I said, either we take that money and we invest it immediately. We try and buy some players. Players like Theo Walcott, I would love to see him at the club. Daniel Sturridge, he might be injury prone, but he's a natural goal scorer, and that is what we do not have. Or we actually give a route through for our young players. Because right now they're getting through in the exact same way they get through in Manchester United, which is someone gets injured and we just have to give them a go. Jack Stevens, perfect example of that. And that isn't really what we do as a club. So we've got to commit to something. And the Van Dijk money can be the start of that, or it can be the end of it. One of two things.
I think the problem that you have at Southampton now is you've got £75 million to spend. Well, every other club knows that you've got £75 million to spend. So to buy players, you're going to be having to pay more of a premium. And yep. Southampton, without any disrespect to them, isn't a club that's going to be able to attract that higher level of player that a £75 million is going to be getting in.
No, and that's exactly right. I've been saying this actually for quite a few weeks now. The big problem we have, and it's because of what's happened in the last sort of 2 years with money in the Premier League, this transfer window is going to be hectic. It's already been hectic. We've seen £142 million spent on Coutinho, £75 million on Van Dijk. This is going to be a very busy January transfer window. It's probably, I reckon it will not only break the record for money spent, but it will break it by a long distance. Clubs are looking to be very active in this window. And the issue we have is if we, say, go for an established player like Walcott, other clubs are going to come in for him. Point in case, Everton also want to come in for him. So we can go for these players who are already established names, but the second we can buy them, other clubs who are more competitive than us can buy them as well. And that is the situation we get stuck in. Now, what we used to do was go and sign players who were relatively unknown, a bit like Sadio Mane, so that we weren't really getting caught in that competition. Do it kind of on the sly, because, you know, there's not big agents and all of that thing. And then, actually, it turns out we signed a really good player. That's harder and harder than ever to do now. And maybe the well's run a little bit dry in terms of players we're aware of in that situation. So now we've got to be competing with the other clubs, and it's a question of, are we actually going to follow that through? Arsenal are saying they want £30 million for Walker. As far as I'm concerned, he's probably not £30 million, but bloody pay it. Pay it, because we don't have that many options at the moment. We've got to commit to something.
I think wasting £30 million on Walcott is just a waste of money, to be honest.
But the simple situation is, how we are in a relegation fight. We cannot go for players we don't know can do it in this league. We can't go and sign a Danny Osvaldo and hope it all works out. We can't do that. It's not going to work. We need to sign people who are established in the Premier League, and what players who can get you goals, get you assists, win you games, can we get for less than £30 million when you consider the amount of money
£15 million.
And we'd have never got Barkley. He'd have signed a new contract before he'd have joined us. This is what I'm saying. The players we've got to compete for, other clubs will compete for. So now we're in that stuck position of, we've got to be offering them something better than those clubs can. And if that's not money, because just about every club can offer big money, then what is it? We're in a catch-22 situation.
I just can't see the likes of a Walcott turning your club round. You know, he's a player that left from Southampton to go to Arsenal when he was about 18, 19, not even that, 17.
Yeah, about that.
And has done what since he joined Arsenal?
He's 20.
Still saying, oh, he hasn't reached his potential. When is he going to reach his potential?
No, you're right. He's as good as he's ever going to get. He's only going to get worse from this point. But at the same time, he's also never really been given a consistent run of games to be able to prove that. And that's not me, like, just, you know, jumping up to defend Walcott. players like that can often be ideal for smaller clubs because of the impact they can have. They can have a bigger impact at a smaller club.
Why was Shaqiri never given that chance?
Why was Shaqiri never given the chance at Bayern? And yet he's doing... Stoke might be crap, but he's one of their few bloody shining lights. That's almost kind of what we need. A player who can pull us up by the bootstraps and drag us forward just by the fact they're a little bit better than just about every other player we have.
Is Walcott genuinely, though, a player that is going to pull you up by your bootstraps? Or is he just going to happily just take 140 grand a week and not really put in a shift? Because he's never been a player that's put a shift in.
I'm not arguing with you. We're kind of screwed. I am not arguing with that fact. But the thing I am thinking is, for this money we can spend, and for the fact that if there is a player who's worth £40 million, can score 20 goals in a season, or get 10, 15 assists, everyone else will be going for those same players. In this transfer window, we are not going to be able to put in a bid for a player and be the only ones doing it. Who the hell can we buy to improve our situation?
I'm going to get rid of Javi Hernandez, don't
you? Improve in Premier League. I think you have to take that risk outside the Premier League and think that in this modern day and age, the Premier League, with its wage structure and the money that it can throw at players, you can buy an excellent player from a decent European club now, and they'll come and join you. You've got like the likes of Wolves being able to take the captain of Porto. They're looking at AC Milan players at the moment, and that's in the Championship. So you can do that.
That's true in an ideal situation, and we should be able to. What Wolves have that we don't have is the connections. And what I mean by when I say that is, as a point of example, we are consistently one of the lowest spending clubs for agents' fees in the Premier League. We have never really broken our wage structure for other players. We've always kind of tried to only ever incrementally increase it, and then we're getting all players on new contracts to bring everyone up to that level. We are not a club that goes out and does what Everton are doing at the moment, does what Everton have been doing for the last year. We have never been that club. Whether or not we change our mind and say, right, we're going to have to be starting to do that in order to compete, okay, fine. As I said, what we're doing at the moment is we're not doing anything. So we've got to decide either we're sticking with our principles or principles go out the window in favour of survival and being competitive and all of that lot. Personally, I think we're probably just going to end up continuing to do a little bit of nothing because
we're going to have to bring together likes of a Walcott to join.
Probably, which is probably why we won't sign him. This is the situation I'm saying. It's not a good situation to be in as a Southampton fan because I don't see us as being able to sign that talent that can take us up a level, that can save our season. Because the second we are in for the kind of talent that can do that, everyone else is too. And right now, they are a hell of a lot more appealing than Southampton. They'll offer more money than Southampton. They're offer a better opportunity to win trophies than Southampton. We don't currently have enough to offer them. That's why I'm worried.
Yeah, for me, I'd be looking at that sort of crop of players at the 19 to 21 mark that I've got scouts going out looking at them and just going in and trying stealing a march on them.
Yeah, I mean, the only player I can think of that I'd like to see a sign from abroad is the Gomez fella at Atlanta. I think he could be a genuine improvement to our team, a proper actual striker. But again, if we were in for him, who else would be? This is a really big problem we have because this isn't going to be a window where clubs sit on their laurels and let other clubs do it and think, all right, we're confident with our squad this season. I don't see any club from first through to 20th who isn't wanting to do business for at least, say, two or three players.
Right, should we get back to Van Dijk? So Jamie Redknapp has said this sign is guaranteed Liverpool fourth place. Do you agree with that statement?
That might have been true until they lost Coutinho. No, I don't agree.
Say Van Dijk's more important to Liverpool than Coutinho.
Yeah, but it's one defender. If they're going off and signing, one defender can definitely improve a team, but the problem isn't one defender, it's the way they play defensively. You can have fantastic defenders. Real Madrid have always had fantastic defensive players, but they don't play at all defensively, so they still concede a shitload of goals every season. It's just sometimes the way you play. And the way Liverpool play brutally exposes their defenders. We're going to be talking by the end of the season saying Van Dijk was a failed signing. We'll be saying that, not because necessarily he will have been a failed signing, or he'll have been rubbish, or it'll have all gone to his head or anything like that, but because Liverpool will continue to concede goals because they don't play a defensive way. There's a reason why managers like Mourinho have been so successful over the years, because they know you can't have it all. You can't play fantastic football and keep clean sheets. That doesn't really happen. Man City, they play fantastic football. They do concede. And they don't, you know, concede just a few goals. They concede quite regularly. They concede in most games. So they know that this is how it actually works in football. And Liverpool don't have such a fantastic squad that they're going to be able to outscore every opponent like what Man City can do. So as much as he can add to what they're doing, unless they actually change the way they play, that whole idea of, oh, we've signed one good defender, therefore it's all sorted now, it's absolute sheer bollocks. They can sign four good defenders. If they're not playing football that even in any way helps their defenders, they'll concede.
Yeah, so as we mentioned, Philip Coutinho has signed for Barcelona for £142 million. Here were you surprised that he signed for Barcelona this time of the season and didn't wait till the end?
Not really. He clearly wanted to go in the summer. I think it was pretty obvious when Liverpool bought Van Dijk for £75 million that they were going to be balancing the books quite quickly afterwards. And they're trying to sort of push through the deal with Leipzig to get Keita.
They've come back to that and said he's not going early, haven't they?
Yeah, they're holding ground on that. But it's a lot of money for Coutinho.
He is.
I know Liverpool players are saying, oh, he's worth that. He's not worth that at all.
Can someone explain this transfer to me? Because here's what I'm thinking. Is Coutinho, you know, one of the top five central midfielders in the world? Because he's either a central midfielder or he's a central attacking midfielder. Is he one of the top five in the world?
No, I wouldn't say top five in the Premier League.
I'd say probably at the moment, Kevin De Bruyne is the best in the world, maybe. It's either him, Modric, or Kroos, probably. David Silva, I'd still say, is better than him, even if he is like 32 now. Dybala is playing essentially as an attacking midfielder. I'd rather have him in the team, he creates more. Thiago, Bayern Munich, better? Yeah, I'd probably say at this level, currently, yes. Verratti, he's a bit more deep-lying, but probably a bit more of a natural talent. Pogba, again, I'd much rather have Pogba than Coutinho if I, you know, could have one of them at Southampton. Eriksen creates more than him in a season. Even Ozil creates more than him in a season. And now we're down to the players like, who are older ones like Iniesta, or, you know, down to people who are a bit more underrated like Hamsik and Rakitic, Isco, Thomas Muller frequently doesn't play as a centre-forward. He quite a lot plays, you know, behind in the attacking mid position. I mean, Koke, he's perhaps a little bit more consistent. Gundogan, I just, £142 million for a player who I would wager isn't even in the top 10. How does that work? How much would someone have to pay to get De Bruyne? $400 billion? This doesn't make sense. This doesn't make any sense.
Have you heard the conspiracy theory that Barcelona shirts in Brazil have plummeted since Neymar's left? So they just wanted to bring a big Brazilian name in to help with that situation.
I think they probably sell enough shirts in Asia that they don't care. I can understand why Neymar to PSG costs $200 million. It's still ludicrous and stupid, but I can understand because he's easily one of the top five players in the world.
He's a global brand.
Yeah, that can make sense to me, or if I am allowing myself to be brutally, horrendously cynical and hate myself. That can make sense to me. Coutinho, as someone who is not only probably not one of the top 10 midfielders in the world, probably doesn't even make it into the top 30, 40 players in the world. How he goes for $142 million is utterly beyond me. I can't understand that at all. If we've robbed Liverpool for Van Dijk, Liverpool have seriously committed crimes against Barcelona. This is just absurd.
So where do you see him fitting in the Barcelona side? Who's he going to displace?
I presume it's some sort of replacement for Iniesta at some point. But at the moment, you know, you've got Suarez up front with Messi, Dembele behind. So, and Iniesta just sort of feeding them to.
Is he just going to replace in like Champions League weeks? He'll play instead of one of them three up front to give them a rest, maybe.
He's
cup tied, isn't he?
It's a huge amount of money on him, but they've already spent a huge amount of money on Dembele. So are they going to swap roles? Or is potentially Suarez's numbers numbered?
The only way it can make sense for me is if they're going to be playing a classical 4-3-3 and having a midfield of Iniesta, Rakitic and Coutinho, and then having, I don't know, Messi, Suarez and Dembele up front. Then it makes sense, but they haven't played classical 4-3-3 for really quite a few years, actually. It doesn't make sense on so many levels, this transfer. Especially when you consider Neymar costs $200 million, everyone's going, oh my god, that's such a large amount of money, but at least they have a lot of money to go and buy players. Now you take into the Dembele and Coutinho transfers, and they're severely in the red. So that's how quickly these things change. I can't make sense of it. I really, really can't.
And they were like heavily pushing to get Griezmann, weren't they, just a couple of weeks ago? Is that still the case?
Who knows?
It's quite a down this week, hasn't it?
So much faith. Yeah, all these clubs would put so much faith in to be doing all these things in a really smart and intelligent way, and you know, being really considered in their transfer approach. Maybe they are just like how we do Football Manager, and just sheer panic takes over when they go, oh God, I sat to sell my player for a lot of money, shortlist four players, offer all four, oh God, two of them have actually accepted, I'll take both.
I do wonder if there may be something coming out in a few weeks in regards to the Griezmann transfer, and that because Atletico lodged in a complaint, didn't they, about it?
Yeah, I reckon in about 15 years' time they'll be looking back on this era and going, "How didn't we see how fucking corrupt it was?"
On the verge of getting another transfer ban, and they're just thinking, quick, let's just spunk away as much money as we can before it happens.
Very possible. I just think it's going to turn out that there's been so much dodgy stuff over these last few years, because the fact that transfers have gone up as exponentially as they have, it almost makes it seem like a pyramid scheme. It genuinely, the more you think about it, the more real it gets. We're living in an entirely speculative market bubble, and all the money just keeps cycling off to the top. It's genuinely actually surprisingly close to a pyramid scheme. So, in a few years, I think we're going to be looking at this and going, my God, how didn't we see it?
Right, shall we move to the blue half of Liverpool? A few departures to discuss first. Ross Barkley has described his £15 million move to Chelsea as unbelievable and a fresh start.
I think it shows the fall from grace for him on his transfer fee. £15 million in this modern market.
He's out of season. He's out of contract at the end of the season.
Even still, that is small change.
They're pushing for like £40 million plus for Sanchez, so they can probably squeeze them all. Mm. Does this transfer just not really work for anyone else on any level?
Have you read that the mayor of Liverpool has launched some play with the police? You think it's been ever since the police have been swindled out of £20 million because they agreed to £35 million. Well, they agreed to £35 million transfer in the summer, and then he pulled out at the last minute.
And he really thinks the police are going to get involved.
He's not. Yeah.
The thing they've got to think, just being practical, is if Chelsea just wanted to do something dirty and convince him to lower his price, they probably didn't have to offer him £35 million to have that conversation. If they're going to do something blatantly fraud and illegal, they could have just done the simple thing of tapping it up, because that has much less significant punishment.
Yeah.
Being owned by Abramovich, who's probably had people killed, we're a little bit smarter with their criminality.
Well, isn't there's links, isn't there, between Everton and Chelsea?
Yeah, with Mashiri and Abramovich, and Mashiri and the other Arsenal guy, Usmanov. It's all, as I said, it's going to turn out there was some seriously dodgy stuff happening in the 2010s. I tell you what, though, the Barkley transfer, can anyone actually answer me why Chelsea have signed him?
Does he need English players for the Champions League?
That's the only thing, is English players they need. Surely, I don't know, you just don't put Lewis Baker out on loan. Or something like this, you go for something that, I don't know, is cheaper and makes you look like less of an arsehole.
The entirety, though, of Chelsea's transfers since they became champions have all been pretty head-scratching.
You
decided to let Matic go and replace him with Danny Drinkwater.
Yoko,
who doesn't really look a Premier League player at all.
I don't back Yoko as another player. I don't understand. Don't understand what he is. What does he do? No, the one I don't get is they're trying to replace Marcus Alonso with Alexandro. Marcus Alonso was the best left back in the league last year. He's probably the best left back in the league this year.
Yeah.
Why are they trying to replace him? That makes no sense. He's getting more goals than some of their forwards.
Well, he's got a bit of a killer pass.
Oh, are we making killer jokes about Marcus Alonso?
Yeah, just a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, okay, he might be a totally reprehensible human being who's going straight to the fiery pits of hell, but he's a damn good left-back. So I don't get what we're doing on any of that sense. All of it, Barkley, it has to be the English quota thing, doesn't it?
That's all I can think of.
He's not better than any of the players he could compete with.
Two seasons, was it last season or the season before? He was like had the top quota for everything in his age group.
Yeah, it was or yeah, something like that. He's totally stagnated to hell. I don't understand. He's not even that young anymore. And they're saying, right, you're going to be competing with Kante, Fabregas, Pedro, or Hazard, or Willian. Who's he better than? Nah, none of them. Not one. Mental. Why if you're Ross Barkley, why do you make that move? Unless you just really like money.
Let's move on from it.
And does anybody know anything about the striker they signed, Sigurðsson? I think Sam said he's the best signing in Europe for the price tag of $27 million.
If he's good enough for the Premier League, if he can translate what he's been doing into Turkish League to the Premier League, then $27 million in today's market is a bargain, because he is a regular goal scorer. He's a big classical forward. So that would make perfect sense if he does that. Downside is Turkish League, you have absolutely no idea if it's going to work out.
Yeah, but can either of you name the last decent player to have come from the Turkish League?
Arda Turan?
No, to the Premier League.
The closest we'll get is Nuri Sahin.
So, it's not got a good history record there, is it?
I'm trying to think of Turkish players in the Premier League.
They don't have to be, they don't have to be Turkish themselves, but having come from the Turkish League to the Premier League, it's a bit of an unproven ground.
Nope, I've got nothing.
And the other transfer out of Everton is Kevin Morales has joined Olympiacos on loan to the end of the season to help his chances of getting in the World Cup squad. But he's only made 2 starts this season, so I'm sure they won't miss him. Right, so in part 3, we'll be discussing this week's...
That's it for transfers.
Sorry?
Is that it for transfers?
Well, we're going to talk transfer gossip next.
Alright, okay.
I can't think of any other transfers. Has there been any others?
No, I was thinking more of potential ones that are on the way.
Alright, well, yeah, we're discussing them next.
Hello, this is Bianca Westwood from Gillette Soccer Saturday on Sky Sports, and you are listening to the V2 Football Podcast.
Right, so we've discussed Everton and Southampton going for Theo Walcott, so shall we move on to Real Madrid have made an approach?
Yes.
Yeah. According to the Daily Mail, Real Madrid have made an approach for Eden Hazard's representatives. It doesn't say if it's there now or in the summer.
There's also talk that there's advanced talks about Harry Kane as well.
Yeah, doesn't Levy come out today saying none of the big players will be leaving and he's going to actually pay them Premier League wages to keep getting to stay?
I don't buy that Real Madrid are going to sign Harry Kane. It could happen, I think, in the summer. There's entirely potential for it. He's a good enough player to play for them, but I think any talk of him doing it in January is massively premature.
I do think Hazard is certainly trying to attract suitors.
Yeah, he's not exactly doing a lot to fend them off, is he?
No.
Thing is, I don't feel like, on the face of it, he's a player who's clearly got top quality. You put him in one of these teams in a slightly easier league, he'll bang in goals, assists, he'll show what he's got consistently. That makes sense on that basis. And he does seem to be a Real Madrid-style player. Unless they sell Bale, and even if they sell Bale, I don't know how much they really need him, though. Because you look at their advanced players, let's say Isco, Benzema, Ronaldo, Bale, Asensio. So Bale is the only one there where it makes sense for him to leave, and there's been a lot of rumours that he's going to leave. Although there are a lot of rumours every single year and it turns out they're wrong. Benzema being the only other one and maybe a long-term replacement for Ronaldo who does not look at all like easing it up. I don't see it as being a massively necessary transfer. This strikes me as a little bit of the Coutinho to Barcelona one where, okay, yeah, good player, makes sense for him to be at that club. At that time, does it make sense? Not really. I don't think it makes that much sense at the moment.
I think it's very much... The guy's back in charge at Real Madrid, isn't he, is the chairman. Who did all the Galactico signings?
Ah, right.
Perez.
Yeah. It's Real Madrid are going to have to, in either January or summer, start flexing their financial might again to compete with Barcelona and PSG. They're clearly in the league. They're not going to win it this year. Champions League, I'd have them, third or fourth favourites at the moment?
Yeah, probably.
They're needing to sort of flex their muscle. And Real Madrid have always flexed their muscle by smashing transfer records.
Thing is, though, and again, I don't mean to sort of bang on the same point. How many of those positions can you really genuinely improve that they've got? So let's let's say this is the starting 11 that they've currently got, apparently. Navas in goal, Carvajal at right back, Moran and Ramos at centre backs, Marcelo at left back, Casemiro at defensive mid, Modric, Cruz and Isco in central midfield, Ronaldo, Bale, wings and Benzema up front. How many of those positions can they actually improve that are genuine improvements? Because I think that central midfield partnership is probably the best in the world. And if you throw Isco in as a central midfielder as well, he is a severely underrated player. Defence, I don't... How many better left-backs are there that would actually sign for Real Madrid? How many better right-backs are there?
I wouldn't have anybody over Carvajal. You know, you're probably looking at Sandro as his peer. That's about it. Goalkeeper, I think you can certainly improve upon. He's a very good goalkeeper, but you know, there's been reasons why they've clearly been after De Gea for a few seasons.
Yeah, goalkeeper, I can understand they would improve. If they're replacing Bale, I can understand that, but that would involve, of course, selling Bale, and Benzema's the only one I can see them improve. And that's at most...
Casemiro as well. Casemiro is... He fits the role that's needed for them, but I certainly wouldn't say he's the best defensive midfielder in the world.
How many ones are there better, though?
I'd say he's top five, but I would have him at the bottom of the five.
So who are the ones who are better than they could buy?
Kante.
Okay, I can see Kante.
Matuidi.
Okay, I can understand Matuidi. I like him personally. I think quite a lot of people would probably disagree with me on that one, but that makes sense to me.
You also forgot. Let me just think of the others. Move on, or I'll come back to you on them.
I just don't think there's that. I mean, the only ones I can think of who, and some of them aren't genuine.
Barca.
Yeah, of course they'll never be able to sign him though. They'll never be able to get him from Barcelona Busquets. Martinez at Bayern Munich can play some defensive mid, but I don't think that's an improvement on Casemiro. Pogba, but he's only recently moved for a record amount. Is that really going to happen? Yeah, neither would I. That's, I said I'm going to be reaching on some of these. Verratti. Verratti's one who can play deep. He's not a defensive midfielder. He's a deep-lying player. Kante, I think, is the only one where there's a real solid basis. And the thing with Matuidi is, as much as I really rate Matuidi, if they were going to move for him, they'd have moved when he just obviously went to Juventus. That would have been where they would have gone for him. And after that, you're talking about the likes of Matic or Fernandinho and all of that lot. Maybe that Fabinho fella at Monaco, but I think he's probably just another version of Casemiro. So, this is the thing. As much as it makes sense...
originally at Real Madrid as well.
Yeah, it makes sense in a lot of ways where Real Madrid's going to throw their financial weight around. But that squad doesn't have that much improving in it. The only two positions I really think they can improve on would be De Gea for Navas, Kane for Benzema. Those are the two positions where I think that's an outright improvement. And the only other one which would make sense is Bale, but I'd rather see him play Asensio because he just looks brilliant than go out and spend a whole bunch of money on someone who's probably about as good as Bale but maybe gets injured less.
Is Asensio the one who got an infection in his leg when he shaved?
What?
Asensio was out for a couple of weeks because he got an infection in his leg because he shaves his legs.
Oh yeah, therefore he should never play again.
Well, he's a very, very good footballer. Yeah. Should be giving him more game time.
I should move on to Man United are interested in PSG Lucas Moura, but they haven't made a bid yet, according to the Sky Sports.
Well, what I've heard on this rumour is that United are keen on getting him on loan. PSG and his agent want it to be a permanent transfer.
This is another one that's a little bit perplexing. If you were to say, as a Man United fan, as a pair of Man United fans, what the one position or the set of positions you really need to improve are, what would they be?
Creative midfielder,
right. So someone who's going to play down the middle. Would you say winger? Would either of you say winger?
Say winger, creative midfielder.
Really? Winger? I mean, you've got great wingers. That's probably the one position you're strongest in. From the outside looking in, I know Mkhitaryan's going to very likely to be getting sold. But if I'm playing Lukaku up front, and I'm not going with two strikers because I'm Mourinho and everyone hates two strikers now. But I want Rashford and Martial on the wings because they are top players. And Lingard is in the absolute bloody form of it.
Hmm? Well, they both play left wing.
We'll put one of them on the right. Jeez, a right-footed player on the right wing. That's absurd, isn't it?
They don't tend to... Neither of them particularly... Martial is always on the left. Or a striker. He doesn't go out to the right wing. And Rashford, he's tried a couple of times. It just doesn't seem to work. The only one that tends to be decent, who's now moved into a more of a cam role, has been Lingard, who's been a revelation this season.
Yeah, Lingard's been absolutely outstanding. But I don't know, is he I don't know enough about him as a player, but is he a proper winger? Does he fit the team? Because if you're, from my point of view, if you're playing on the left-hand side, somebody who's right-footed and wants to cut inside, and you're playing on the right-hand side, somebody who wants to go down the right-hand side and cross, your team is incredibly unbalanced on the left. You then lose all sense of balance. There's a reason why teams play either two inside forwards or two wingers, because they want to have a sense of there are actual, you know, balanced options we're using. It just doesn't make masses of sense to me, this transfer. He's a good player. I'm not going to argue against that. I think he's actually surprisingly underrated, the talent he is. Unless they're going to undergo and sign a left winger as well, and have left wingers and right wingers, which I would be a big bloody fan of, for the sake of it as well. I don't know why this doesn't feel like it should be United's priority, is signing a winger, and that seems to be what they're really focusing on.
I think for the money he's potentially available at, it fits a role that we perhaps have needed. I do think we need a right winger, and it's a fraction of a price for the player's ability. It lets us also target other positions and have quite a bit of cash to spend.
Yeah,
I can understand it on that basis, but here's the other question I've got for you. Juan Mata and Jesse Lingard, what do you do with them?
I think Jesse Lingard stays in his role as Cam at the moment.
What about Mata?
He can move Mata as a more central midfielder.
Yeah, Mata's been periphery, sort of taking in the slot of right mid or Cam, dependent upon the game on, you know, just rotation wise. He's certainly not been a starting 11 guaranteed.
I mean, if I'm a United fan, what I'd be thinking is what I really want, despite the fact I love Phil Jones, what I really want is a proper world-class centre-back to partner Bailly long-term. That's what I'd be thinking. Again, I love Phil Jones, but I want you to sell him to us. That's a different situation. But if I'm looking at the actual weaknesses in the squad, I'm thinking we either need another world-class centre-half, or we need an actual left-back who isn't either Fat or Ashley Young. This just doesn't feel like it should be the priority.
Looking at left-backs, I think the problem that they've got at the moment is they were going to sell Luke Shaw. All of a sudden in the past month, Luke Shaw's gone off the Greggs diet. And he's suddenly looking like Luke Shaw that we bought off you.
Alright, but if, let's say they sign Lucas Moura, and now we've got all these players who play in midfield, is there any way through, do you see, for the young players now? That sheer mass of competition in midfield?
I think there's always a chance, because who'd have said at the beginning of the season that Jesse Lingard had a chance?
True, but he only really got his chance. No, I'm not arguing he's not a Man United youth academy player or anything like that. He only got his chance for injuries, and now we're getting to the point of just how many players need to be getting injured
how the youngsters get a chance.
I still don't feel like that should be the way. And I feel like at this point we're getting to the stage now at United where you need to have probably about six major injuries before these guys can get a game. But maybe I'm being idealistic about Man United and the club they're supposed to be. I don't know. Maybe I've got higher standards for you than United fans have.
No, I don't think that's the case at all. I think, like, you look at United and they're regularly playing two born in Manchester through the academy players at the moment.
Two, bloody hell.
Most of the other big clubs do.
Well, I mean, those are the ones you really want to compare to, the clubs who spend $400 million every single window. Jeez. Yeah,
there's only Spurs that do that are similar.
Is this the point we've got to in football? We're just happy with this now. Oh, yay. Two players. Woo. What happened to the class of 90, whatever the hell it was?
Well, most clubs don't bring through five or six players at once. They only have one or two. One per year probably makes it, if that.
And it was the class of 92, that was 25 years ago. Even at the time, that was a rarity to happen. That's why it's called the class of 92.
I hate to be the one who is the youngest person here in saying this, but we do remember that football did exist before the Premier League. When we say, oh, this is the way it's always been, no, really mostly only the last 20 years when all the money's been slowly being injected into it. Football was a little bit different before that. And I wasn't even alive to know that.
And I remember United of the 80s. They didn't really bring through that many decent youth players.
You were shit back then. It's worth remembering that too.
Well, when we won the league for the first time and the class of 92 hadn't really come through at that point. They were, you know, they were just starting to. That wasn't any young players in there from United.
Or maybe I'm just too idealistic these days.
Lee Sharp was about it.
Lee Sharp, what a player.
Alexis Sanchez, where's he going?
That's my next one, yeah. So the Guardian are saying that Man City are offering $20 million for him. And they're going to give him £250,000 a week.
Jesus, Sanchez, take that contract. £250 million a week.
Sky Sports in Italy are saying that United want to sign him and will throw Mkhitaryan in as part of the deal.
And more money as well.
It doesn't mention any money in the article I read.
Yeah, they're offering higher wages.
Yeah, alright.
And they're offering $25 million as well as
Mkhitaryan.
How many just play at Arsenal?
Come to Manchester. So we get Lucas Moura and Sanchez. There you go. He'll score loads of goals.
That's the thing as well. It's that he goes to City. You say about, like, why do United need a Lucas Moura? Why on earth does City need Sanchez?
So, I mean, that was going to be my next point, so thank you for raising it. They don't bloody need him. What's
they think? To sell City shirts and I can't say the right words, though. To sell City shirts in South America.
Alexis Sanchez, classic South African. I remember seeing him and Benny McCarthy up front, banging them in.
I said it right.
The only reason I think City are after him is that they know Aguero's going in the summer.
I think they're looking to do almost a Chelsea with what they've done to Tottenham over consecutive seasons. We'll sign him so no one else can. And that's why they signed Willian. Turned out to be a great signing. But they signed players before just other people can't. I think that's what they're thinking. I mean, they're genuinely thinking, right, so either we want to compete with these big other clubs in Europe for the Champions League, so we should probably not let them get this genuinely world-class player, or the likes of United, who are probably our closest competitors, are trying to sign him, and he would genuinely improve that squad, so let's try and get him as well.
Yeah, but it was always them at the front of the queue, though. You know, it's only really that in the last few days that United suddenly seem to have sniffed around.
And City's strikers are both very injury-prone, so bringing another striker would make sense.
I think it is a preemptive move to stop other people getting him.
I wonder with United if it's just a bit of... We know he's on your way to City, but make City pay an extra $5 million.
Wouldn't it be hilarious if they're both just completely playing each other? City think they're only signing him to get ahead of clubs like United. United are only going for him to make City pay more. See, this is what I'm talking about, speculative markets. It's all bollocks.
So in the final part of the show tonight, we'll just finish with a little bit of international news, if that's okay.
And you're listening to the
V2
podcast.
So England will play Nigeria at Wembley and Costa Rica at Ellen Road as part of the warm up for the World Cup.
Yay!
Woo!
2-0-0s. Can't wait.
I don't see how Nigeria are a similar team to Tunisia, apart from they're both African.
Yeah, that shows you how the FA thinks. They go, right, we're going up against a South American opponent, or Central American, whatever exactly they are, and we're going up against an African opponent. Let's do that beforehand.
Well, Panama and Costa Rica makes a bit of sense to me, because they play a similar style, but Nigeria and Tunisia don't play similar styles.
We've got to remember, and I've mentioned this earlier, that sometimes managers and directors of football are a little bit like real people where they just do dumb shit. I think the FA is probably as breathtakingly incompetent as they could be. And this stuff just kind of illustrates it. Where they've gone, Tunisia, massively tightly packed defensive unit. Nigeria, known for being very fast and attacking and actually quite bad at that. Yeah, that's about the same team. That makes sense. We'd have been better off playing Iceland as a more comparable team to play. Do you know who would have been a more comparable team to play? Costa Rica. This doesn't make sense. I'm sorry, this is how bad the FA are, that they think this makes perfect sense. We're playing an African, we're playing a Central American, so let's just do that, and we'll do it again. We play enough Europeans and all of that lot for this to be easy. Useless nonsense.
I was like, one of the Eastern European teams would have made more sense from a defensive point of view to play it when you're playing Tunisia.
Yeah, why are we playing Nigeria? Why aren't we playing Nigeria? Who thought of that? Whose idea was that? I leave it to my assistant manager on Football Manager. He doesn't make this stupid decisions. God above.
Right. Hold on, another positive England discussion. We'll finish there. So, thanks for joining us tonight. Please follow us on Twitter, it's at V2Football. Check out our website, it's V2Football.com. Good night.
Bye. Bye.